Hello, and welcome to this edition of the Entrepreneurship Through Acquisition podcast, sponsored by the Polsky Center for Entrepreneurship at the University of Chicago Booth School of Business. I'm Brian O'Connor, Adjunct Professor of Entrepreneurship at Chicago Booth, and joining me today, I have the pleasure of speaking with Brian Vander Hayden, Booth MBA from 2014, also the CEO of Richmond Alarm Company, a business that he acquired out of his search fund in July of 2017. And we're thrilled to talk to you today, Brian, about Richmond Alarm Company, your search, and some of the unique challenges that we're facing in today's economic environment. Thank you for joining.
Yeah, I appreciate you having me, Brian. Thank you.
Great. Well, Brian, so I would love to hear, you know, maybe let's start by a little bit of your background. What led you to the ETA path, and ultimately, you know, what made you pull the trigger and you know, embark on this journey?
Yeah, sure. So I spent a number of years at a large pharmaceutical and med device manufacturer headquartered in Illinois. And throughout that time was sort of searching for my path, and fortunately had some really good opportunities there. One of which was we relocated to California and I spent some time in their innovation group for the diabetes care group. So we spent our time there trying to develop next generation glucose monitoring devices. And while I was out there, was sort of bit by the entrepreneurial bug. I think as a lot of people are that are out in California, it's a great entrepreneurial culture, of course. And so in so doing, started searching for various opportunities. At one point in time, decided to attend University of Chicago as we made our way back to the Midwest, and was a TA for Scott Meadows' Commercializing Innovation course. And through that, had met a couple people that were conducting the search model. That was my original introduction. And at the time in my life there, it was a perfect overlap for the ability to chase an entrepreneurial dream while not going the pure startup route and sort of risks associated with that. And so, you know, for whatever reason at that point in time, it fit, personal fit versus what the opportunity was. So took advantage of that opportunity to meet several of the investors, explore what exactly search meant through discussion with multiple CEOs, and ultimately decided it was the right path for me. Took that leap in 2015.
Fantastic. So, you know, going from that decision to make the leap into actually executing on it, tell us a little bit about where did you start? How did you strike up conversations with investors? And then maybe the early days of transitioning into the search. How did you begin to execute on what seems like, you know, for a lot of people looking in on this path, a pretty daunting task to sort of get up and running when you've never done this before?
Yeah, it certainly is a Herculean task. So in my specific case, from the person that I had heard about search from, they made a couple investor introductions for me. And then those introductions led to other introductions, talk to other searchers, other CEOs who had already acquired companies. They introduced to other investors as well. So, you know, I think the best way to describe it is it's a period of sort of discovery. And I think that's what matters a lot. And ultimately, those skills are what helps operate a company. And so it's really following your nose, understanding what you're interested in and what you need to learn to become comfortable with the model. And one thing leads to another, really. That's the way it happened. And there's really no other way to go through it from what I've heard from others as well. So just constantly asking for opinions and perspective, and then introductions, not being shy to ask for those intros. In terms of how I actually started the search, that is daunting. There's no question about it. I ultimately raised the fund to a certain point. And at that point, I was working full time for that medical device manufacturer. And at one point just decided, okay, now is the time. Now is the time to sort of burn the oars. And ultimately, I think that's something that every entrepreneur faces. And, you know, how to get comfortable with that is always the unknown. But in my specific case, it was I felt that I was backed by really solid investors with really good perspective that could help me on this journey. I had also built out the network through Booth and others that gave additional perspective on how to actually set up a search. Now, I do remember the first couple of days sitting at a desk in my basement wondering just what the heck you do next. And and you start to scan the web, and you've already got your thesis developed, of course, but start to scan for companies and just try to, your research skills are really put to the test. And then your sales skills are put to the test when you start the outreach. So no question, it's daunting, but the first step in any race is lacing up the shoes.
Yeah, that's great advice, Brian. Tell me a little bit about, in those early days, taking those first steps, what were you drawn to? Type of company, maybe industry, business attribute? What were you looking for? And then ultimately we'll get to, you know, what led you to Richmond Alarm Company. And if that, I suspect that is a business that, possessed a lot of the traits that you were drawn to in the early days of your search. But I'd like to explore that a little bit.
Yeah. So in my case, there was some altruistic tilt towards the search, as well as the business model or financial aspect of it. And I can touch on each. So the first was, I was in the healthcare industry from the start of my career and spent a good number of years there. And I felt a really good draw towards helping people or solving a problem, which is why I was in that industry. And so when I knew when I took this entrepreneurial leap that I wanted to find something where I could really connect with and feel that we were creating a ton of value. So I actually started the search in a variety of healthcare service industries or sectors. So really tried to focus on that for the first, I'll call it 3 months or so. And security fit nicely with that. There were a couple other industries that fit nicely with that. We shelled industries that didn't fit with the altruistic aspect of it. And so really that was sort of my personal criteria for the search. Now the business criteria is everything that's drafted up in the volumes of research on search funds. I think, especially in today's market, it's been tested now. Recurring revenue is such a huge aspect to any entrepreneur like me with limited experience running a business, getting into that role. And so I think recurring revenue from the financial aspect and good EBITDA margins, it sounds simple and it sounds sort of minimalistic, but really that's the important part from the business standpoint. So as long as a business fit those two things, we were very interested.
Great. Well, I mean, and it's fantastic. And I'm thrilled to hear that you did have an altruistic element to your criteria. Tell us a little bit more about that and how it might have influenced the messaging that you went out to business owners with, and maybe the spaces that you were, you know, you mentioned healthcare, but maybe talk a little bit more about that altruistic element and its influence on your approach, your tactics, and the ponds with which you were fishing.
Yeah. In my specific case, there was, I think business owners want to see a passion behind why you want to buy their business or why you want to buy into their industry. And these people they're pros. They've grown a successful business. They know how to weed out sort of the weak and the strong. And so they can see through, if you don't have that passion or that conviction, they'll read into that right away. So yeah, that wasn't why I searched for businesses that I could have a good connection to, but I do think that was a successful element of the search, just in terms of their screening aspect. Now, in terms of my specific outreach, I think those business owners could see that I was passionate about making a difference, taking care of their people. I had good anecdotes from where I came from and what I had done that helped resonate with that. And ultimately what at least I figured we were trying to create at that time was credibility in any sense in outreach. Credibility can come from passion and conviction behind where you're headed or why you want to do something or where you see an opportunity to create value. Can also come from different connections that you have. I think that was another big element of that informed my specific outreach, was who we're connected to in our own personal network that could provide value post acquisition, and the owners were very interested in that.
Fantastic. Let's talk a little bit about, you know, the specifics around Richmond Alarm Company, the business that you acquired. You mentioned earlier the importance of recurring revenue. We talk a lot about recurring revenue on this show, and I'm a big believer and in complete agreement with some of the things that you were saying earlier. What was it that ultimately drew you to the company and made that be the one, right? It ultimately made you say, this is the business that I want to, you know, join and lead and take to the next level.
Yeah. So we had searched in security. And by the way, when I say we, it was myself and a team of interns. I was a solo searcher, so to speak, but with a really good team. So we had searched in the security industry for the better part of the search period, which ultimately ended up taking 2 years. And so I think we had an opportunity to look at several businesses in that industry and segment out the not the good and the bad, because most of them were good, but really the really strong from the maybe not as strong. So I think even in a short period of time, we could develop some pattern recognition around what was good in this industry and where some opportunities were. So that helped. Specifically with Richmond Alarm, it was a 70-year-old business at the time, so we knew it had longstanding roots in the community and a good brand reputation. Diligence in this case is pretty visible. You could drive around and see yard signs and stickers on residential or commercial properties. So that helps. And, you know, the owners were good people. At the end of the day, I think they were really trustworthy people that we felt had built a solid business. And so that was attractive. The other element here, obviously recurring revenue in this industry, recurring revenue can represent anywhere from 50 to 80%, depending on how much installation dollars you're charging. And so that was a great element. We saw really good upside opportunities with this business for increasing sales for home automation. So not a lot of their customers had home automation features. We figured that was good upsell opportunity. And then this market specifically was another element at play. So Richmond, they had operations in the western part of the state, headquarters in Richmond, and then an office at Virginia Beach area. And so we figured while geographically dispersed to some degree, it wouldn't face the similar pressures, competitive pressures that a larger city would face. And so, you know, for those reasons, we liked this opportunity and felt that we could really build on top of what the former owners had built.
You talked a little bit about your growth plan and the avenues that might be available in home automation. My guess is that there were others. How have those played out over in the, you know, early days since acquiring the business in mid 17?
Yeah, I think it's largely played out the way we thought it would play out. In our industry, so that was good. In our industry, we've also had things that have changed post-acquisition. Example, Amazon paid $1 billion to buy Ring. And so now, you know, when I first joined even 2.5 years ago or so, just about 3 years ago, I guess now, I would ask neighbors and friends, et cetera, you know, if they had a doorbell camera, not many people had it. And now all of them say, oh yeah, you mean the Ring. You talking about the Ring? Yeah, we're talking about the Ring. I think that helped fuel the awareness of these home automation features, doorbells, cameras, things like that. And so on the one hand, that probably helped it. On the other hand, it's become significantly more competitive. So one, that's played out okay. Two, we've also been able to uncover several other opportunities, particularly on the commercial side of the business. And one thing we didn't understand, as an example, would be the growth in access control or cloud-hosted access control has exploded over the last couple years, particularly in our region. And so, you know, I think up front, developing the thesis behind what the growth opportunities are at the company, you know, may or may not come true or may come true in some different variety, probably roughly right, precisely wrong on that. but it's being opportunistic. In our case, it was being opportunistic about other opportunities we uncovered after we got in the door.
Yeah. So I want to go back to something that you mentioned very briefly, Brian, but the importance of the sellers, and you know, you describe them as good people, and how important it is to buy businesses from people, you know, and partner with people that you can trust. You bought this business, as I understand it, you know, a company was formerly owned and operated by a father and his children. Tell me a little bit about that dynamic and what your experience was stepping into a 70-year-old, you know, family-owned and operated company. How was that transition, and how has that played out?
Yeah, it's been great. So the father that had started the company had moved on by the time I came into the picture, and it was run by the two brothers. And one of those brothers wanted to retire, and the other one was still willing to work or help out in any regard. So it's worked out very well. The one brother that wanted to retire has since retired. The other brother is still working with the business in a scaled back IT role, and that's been very helpful because we have a complex monitoring center that's open 24/7. So he really helps with that. Going back to the discussion on trustworthiness of the sellers. Yeah, I think there's in our experience, there's only so much that you can craft in a legal document. And then legal documents become the words that people live by. And I think at the end of the day, where we've seen success beyond the legal document is just the spirit of the transaction and us being fair to them and them being fair to us for things that couldn't have possibly been drafted up front potentially. And so I can guarantee we would not have had that type of harmony 2 to 3 years into the deal had they not been good people and our investors operating as good people as well. So that's why I think it's so important is it's the unknown multiple years down the road that if you can really trust that person, have a good relationship with them, which frankly, I think needs to happen to get any deal done. It's a good foundation for future challenges.
I think that's such great advice, Brian. All right. Well, let's talk about the 800-pound gorilla that's in the room here. You're now operating a business in a very new, as of a couple weeks ago, and rapidly evolving and dynamic situation, given the coronavirus pandemic and the associated economic challenges that we're facing. How are you, as CEO of a small business, navigating this challenging time, and what is your what does your day-to-day look like these days?
Yeah, the day-to-day, I would say starting about a week and a half ago, has totally changed. 100% of my focus is now on either contingency planning for the employees, contingency planning for customers, for investors. So let's walk back to a week and a half ago when we thought we may have to start having workers employees in the office work remote. Now, keep in mind, we have a unique, I mean, everyone has a unique business, but our business is structured such that we have a monitoring center that has to stay open 24/7. And at the time, they had to be on site in our facility to monitor, which is directly counter to a lot of the mandates and advice that have rolled out since. We have technicians who, you know, their job is visiting homes and businesses to either conduct service or new installations. And then we have sales, whose job is to go meet with people in their home or business to generate those sales, and then office workers to help manage all of the background stuff. So we had to plan for every single one of those. So day one, let's call it, we had a all management meeting of contingency planning in terms of who can work remote, who can't work remote, what would we do to get those employees to work remote. So sort of like disaster recovery planning on the fly. We had good disaster recovery plans in place for all sorts of natural disasters and other things, but not the pandemic, which I guess is similar to other business owners as well. So going from that point forward, all of a sudden it was trying to move our workforce remote, which was a bigger challenge than we had thought, Fortunately, we had some IT investments take place in the first couple of years that enabled that IP phone system, cloud-hosted software, et cetera. So, you know, it wasn't as bad as it could have been, but nonetheless a challenge. You know, not everybody has internet at home, a real challenge that we had to overcome. How are we going to solve that? Most of these people had never even worked from home at all. And so, you know, just trying to navigate that was sort of challenge number one. Next is reassuring the customers. Constantly have to reassure the customers that we've put new protocols in place for cleanliness. We've taken all sorts of extra measures to make sure that if somebody's sick, they're going to stay home, and really try to continue to build trust with the customers on that end. And then there's obviously the scenario planning for investors, which is, and this is not dissimilar from everybody I talk to, how much cash do we have? Where can we get more cash potentially? How long can we last in a worst case scenario? And just constantly trying to think through that, which a month ago it was, where can we use cash to grow? And it quickly flipped to how can we use cash to survive? And it was just a total remarkable flip. I think the management team got on board very quickly, and I appreciate that. That was great. I think when you start asking them questions like, where can we cut back tomorrow, just in case, people tune in pretty aggressively. And so I was pleased with that response. Now my day-to-day is basically, we look at cash every single day at this point in time. We're constantly refreshing several websites to figure out what type of government aid is going to pass. The House passed a bill last week. The Senate is in the throes of passing a bill now, and so we'll see what is involved with that, because that's going to ultimately help not only our own employees but this general region, at which we're a very diversified provider. You know, our customer base is very diversified, so you know we will see some impact of it. We're trying to determine what impact it will have, as every business owner is, and then trying to contingency plan accordingly. So much unknown. It's just unbelievable unknown, unbelievable level of assumptions, and then hoping for the best, planning for the worst.
Yeah, there was so much good learning and advice in all of that. I mean, it sounds like from my perspective, you're absolutely focused on the right things, which are the health and safety of your employees and your customers, and really the liquidity of your business, and making sure that you've got the necessary cash and resources available to sustain your business in the event that there are prolonged implications associated with this pandemic. So
that's right.
It absolutely sounds like you're focused on the right things.
And then the other thing that's come up as a result of that is there's been several positives that we did not foresee. Example, we have, so technicians, before they would roll to a commercial environment, would always want more information. So now we've started conducting some remote service calls, and lo and behold, we can solve some of those problems remotely. We don't actually have to roll a truck. So there's little things like that will ultimately help the customers. And if something like this were to happen again, would keep everybody safe from harm or whatever. So I think those are some benefits that will come out of this. Different sales processes. We're developing better information to get the customers so that we don't have to visit them. We could maybe have a phone consultation first. So there's a lot of upsides that will come from this. I think it's a matter of getting through this period and really exploring what those are to see how big of a benefit they can be.
Yeah, taking the learnings coming out of a challenging situation like this and applying them to strengthen your business and your offering to your customers and the way that your team operates, I think that's amazing. I think that's so great that you're keeping a close eye on those learnings and what they might do to strengthen your business over the medium and long term. Right. Tell me, Brian, what is your take on, you know, Richmond Alarm Company, or maybe more broadly, the home security and surveillance industry and its position and ability to weather this current crisis, and how it emerges from, you know, once we get back to a little bit more of a and who knows exactly what the new norm will look like, but how does your industry and your business specifically emerge, and how might you be well positioned, or maybe in a compromised position as we think about what a emergence from all of this might look like?
Yeah, I continue to be optimistic on that. So we've done our work now through contingency planning to shore up the health of the company, I'll say, to then support, obviously, the health of our customers and employees. So we're in a good spot in that regard. In terms of the industry or Richmond Alarm specifically and the emergence post-pandemic, let's call it, I tell the employees, in a day and age where things have changed to the point where maybe we don't want to be touching doors as often, I think an access control card with an automatic entry door becomes more important. The day and age where you may not go greet somebody at the door, a camera becomes extremely important. Day and age where maybe there's some heightened fear in the marketplace, people want to secure their property and belongings and ultimately employees and family members. So, I do think there is solid underlying demand for the services that we offer. And what we've done through this crisis over the last couple of weeks is really shore up the company health to be able to allow the great employees to ultimately deliver that value to the customer. So I think we're in a really good spot to capitalize on the need in the market at this point in time.
That's great to hear, Brian. And I appreciate the perspective from the front lines, which you absolutely are on right now. Okay, I think we've got just a little bit of time left. The last question I'd have for you is, what advice do you have for listeners that might be contemplating the ETA path? This is a crazy, moment in time right now, but, how has it influenced maybe your thinking and the advice that you might give for those that are contemplating following in your footsteps?
Yeah, I would say that there will always be opportunities. The market may change what those opportunities are, but there's always an opportunity to search for a business to buy and an opportunity to create value for customers, which is ultimately what we're all after. So I think there's no better time to start a search fund, I guess I would say. And then that will also follow tomorrow and the next day after that. I think more importantly is it a right fit for the person? Is this something that they want to do? And more importantly than that, are extremely passionate about doing, because it's a rocky road. And the only way to get through that is to have a ton of conviction behind what you want to do and why you want to do it. In terms of how to develop that conviction, the way I did it and the way I would still recommend is just talk to as many people as possible. Everybody has perspective, and every perspective is N of one. And so the more people that you can discuss the highs and the lows with, the more people that you can get a better understanding of how it would fit with you personally, certainly helps. So my only advice would be, just find if it's right for you. The way to do that is to talk to people. Call me up. I'll introduce you to other people. There's certainly plenty of opportunities for networking at Booth and others. So I really think that's the only way through, is just grinding out the research and understanding if it's good for you. And ultimately, that will create the skill set that's needed for the search and ultimately for running a company anyhow. So it's good. It's good practice.
Brian, thank you so much for being generous with your time. I know that this particular moment in time is a very busy one for small business CEOs. So your investment of time and insights is extremely appreciated. On behalf of all of our listeners and the Polsky Center for Entrepreneurship at Chicago Booth, we sincerely appreciate you sharing your time and learnings and insights with us today.
Yeah, thanks for having me, Brian. I really appreciate it.
Be well.